Nils got up and went to him, turning the dwarf's face from side to side and peering into his eyes. Nameless blinked, and his lips parted. They were dry and cracked.
"Water," Nils said. "He needs water."
Nameless muttered something. Nils bent closer so that he could hear.
"What was that?"
"Shog, water."
Silas clapped his hands and a huge tankard with a great head of froth appeared in them.
"I think I know what he wants."
He went down on one knee, held Nameless's head up, and put the tankard to his lips. The dwarf's tongue dipped into the froth.
"Mmm,"
he grunted, and then took a sip. The sip became a glug, and then he pulled the tankard away from Silas and poured the contents all over his face, lapping up as much as he could.
"More,"
he growled, and Silas produced another tankard out of thin air. Nameless sat up and downed the whole lot in one go. He let out a burp and then raised one bushy eyebrow at Eliza.
"It's all right, lassie. You can let go of my dwarfhood now."
"What?"
Nameless nodded to his groin.
"Oh, I was just..."
"Aye, lassie, I know. But you'll have to wait your turn."
A shadow seemed to cross his face then, and he looked deeply into the empty tankard.
"How's the magic holding up, laddie?"
"Need to take it easy," Silas said. "I've used a lot of power already today."
"I know," the dwarf said. "Maybe more than you should have."
He gave Silas a lingering look.
"I don't," Silas began. "I've seen many dark things in my time," Nameless said. "Darker than you can imagine. Just make sure you aren't getting into something you can't handle."
Mr. Mortimer Burroughs, president and head undertaker of Burroughs, Burroughs and Clods, was depressed.
"Business is just terrible," he moaned, his dark eyes grim. "Why, less than 20 years ago, people were dying to get into my establishment. Now I practically have to go out and recruit."
"You think that's bad?"
A disembodied voice echoed softly from behind his left shoulder.
"What about me?"
Mortimer rolled his eyes. "No, I am not dealing with this now. Not today," he thought. Pretending not to hear, he stood up from behind his beautifully polished black mahogany desk.
"Oh,"
he groaned, stretching his stocky arms wide.
"And on the day of the performance, I was walking across the parade ground when our headmaster, one Tom Gallagher, a notorious alcoholic, called out and bid me to give him my attention for a moment. At first, I thought myself in some kind of trouble and that he was hearkening me thus to reproach for the grievance. But he said, 'Mr. Hole, it is my understanding that you harbor a desire for the stage. Your teachers have collectively made it clear to me that when the task arises and lends its contents toward the theatrical, your participation is eager and plentiful.' I told him he spoke the truth, and I did often wish there to be more theatrical diversions in our study schedule. 'I have just the thing for you, then.' I was now excited and waited on each word. 'The Arts Council performers visiting this day are looking for a student to assist them in varied parts of their program. If you wish to be the chosen aide, then report this minute to the brick building where they ready themselves.' 'Thank you, sir,' I replied in earnest.
'Then hurry about your business, boy.'
'Hello, dear boy,'
cried the old one upon seeing me standing behind them.
'Are you the budding thespian of which we are in desperate need?'
'I hope I can help out, sir.'
'Well then, come forward and present thyself.'
With trepidation, I walked over and gave my name. The young actor, too, moved forward and stood at the side of his matured colleague as I approached.
"My name," the old one bellowed eloquently, "is Herman Innaton, Esquire, and this," he placed a tender palm upon his cohort's shoulder, "is my accompanying player, the most superb Clinton Whiff."